Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Extra Serving, a podcast by The Last Bite Network and Nation's Restaurant News. I am your host, Holly Petrie, here with the latest episode. I'm joined by two of my colleagues.
My name is Sam Okas, editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
And my name is Leanne Zinsmeister, managing editor of Nation's Restaurant News.
Well, we all made it. We survived Create.
Barely. My voice didn't survive.
We're all bodies back in our homes, recording back on Zoom again. So we're not in person anymore. Sad.
But it was nice to be together for a few days. We don't get to do that very often. Certainly I don't get to be face to face with you guys nearly enough. So it was good for us as a team to be together, but more importantly for everybody as an industry to be together. We haven't had an event like this in over 2 years. So, it was refreshing and I think we all needed that.
It was nice to be able to see other industry professionals who, you know, we've just been writing about for so long or doing Zoom interviews or all these things that we haven't been able to see people face to face. Oh, it was so nice.
Agreed.
And now we're back on Zoom, but hopefully not for long. Hopefully things get moving and we can get going. I would say that I felt pretty safe at the show. So I predict that we'll see some more shows coming up because I think people are feeling like we all know the protocols at this point.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, like I said, there was an energy in the room that felt like people needed this. The state of the country as it is, cases are dropping. Delta seems to be going further and further away. Predictions for the coming months are pretty optimistic that, this could be behind us. So, you know, looking at 2022, we might legitimately be seeing a real year of normal conference and event activity, including Create next year, Create 2022 in Denver, September 19th through 21st.
Too early to talk about that, Sam. Too early.
I know. I'm sorry, but and I don't want to jinx it with that we're going to get some other variants. But yeah, look, I mean, this is sort of the launching back into regular life kind of moment. It felt like for a lot of people, and yeah, I just think it wasn't weird or awkward at any point. I think everybody just was really embracing it.
Yeah, I agree. There was definitely, like Sam said, just a great energy. People were excited to see each other. I had never met the people that I was interviewing on Tuesday, so it was fun to see their faces in person after all of the Zooms and Teams prep calls for all those weeks. Everybody seemed to have a good time and to be excited for more similar events in the future.
Yeah, so our podcast Wednesday, we recorded Tuesday morning. So we left off right before all of the events of Tuesday, which were a lot, and then including the events of Wednesday. So we have all of those to summarize for our lovely, lovely listeners who may or may not have been at the event. So we could start with all of the Ask the Expert sessions on Tuesday. We had back-to-back-to-back-to-back sessions. We were recording podcasts, including the one that will be up later in this episode, with Michael Lestoria, Spike Mendelsohn, and James Park. So can you guys kind of summarize a little bit about what the Ask the Experts sessions were about? We kept calling them eight sessions, so it's much easier to say it when you just say eight. It also is like Create or I Ate My Food, so it's a little fun tidbit.
Oh boy, Holly, you're in top form right now, so yeah. Keep rolling. This is great. Why should Leanne or I talk? You've got this down. Oh boy. Okay. I'll go ahead and tell you a little bit more, Holly, about our Ask the Experts sessions at Create, the event we just hosted in Denver. So, you know, the whole theory behind Create was that we wanted to rethink the paradigm of the traditional conference. We wanted to try to think of a new structure that wasn't just hour-long panel after hour-long panel after hour-long panel. You know, the vibe of events today is that I think people want something a little bit more fast-paced. They want a little bit more of an opportunity to choose what content they want to see and not sit through irrelevant content. So we set up the Ask the Expert sessions on the second day of Create to be very much a choose your own adventure of great speakers covering very important subject matters. And it was done in half hour one-on-one sessions. So in a few instances, we had multiple people from the same company, but otherwise it was just one person talking about their story and their expertise. And, you know, so I could only speak for the four that I moderated, because those were the ones I had to go to. Of course, all of us at the editorial team were moderating these sessions. We had three going on at any given time, but it was such a great way to have very honest conversation. It was, a smaller room because we broke up into three concurrent sessions. And it felt like our speakers had that opportunity to be very open and transparent with that room. And then we had a lot of engagement from the audience. All of the feedback I received afterward was super positive because, again, it was fast paced. It felt like you had direct access to the speaker. It felt like it was more of a conversation. It wasn't just your generic conference model. And so we were thrilled that went well. Some highlights for me, Kalila Cooper speaking about Chick-fil-A. You don't always get that kind of access to Chick-fil-A that she offered, sort of a peek behind the curtain of how they operate their service model. Andre Venner talking about virtual brand innovation. Just really interesting to see what they're doing there. Michael Astoria, of course, talking about labor. He has a lot of thoughts, and the room was really engaged to hear his thoughts on a pretty progressive model that he's setting out for the industry. And then I also moderated a session with Mike Speck and Stephen Harmon of Fusion, an emerging brand that has really interesting thoughts about their theory is make things less hard, which seems obvious, but they had a really a cool way to approach that they shared with our audience. Leanne, how were your sessions? Tell us about the ones you hosted.
Mine were great, and I wasn't sure how they would be because we were doing these all day from 9 a.m. to 4:30 in the afternoon. I moderated two, and they were in the last two time slots, and I thought, oh, are people going to come? Or are they going to want to go take a nap, change for tonight? Like, are we still going to have the same energy? And we did. I agree with Sam. I just love the more intimate format. The audience was jumping in with their own questions throughout, having conversations. I spoke with Jane Gertie Abel of Donatos at the end of the day. Wow, none of us got enough sleep this week.
I'm glad it's not just me.
Donatos. And that was such a high energy session. She said at the end, she apologized to me. She said she felt like I had only gotten to ask like three questions and we took up the whole 30 minutes. And I was like, no, that's the moderator's dream, is for you to just run with it and tell your story. And Donato's, the title of that session was Innovating at a Legacy Chain. And I am really impressed with what Donato's is doing. They have really progressive labor programs, including a sabbatical program that they've set up. And it was really great, high energy stuff all day long. And that was great. We also had the person who came up to unmic me at the end said that he was riveted the entire time, and that he normally spends when he works conferences, doesn't necessarily even pay attention to what's going on, but he said he was fully invested in Jane's story. So definitely a great session. And I also spoke with Peter Newland, who is from Denver, and shared a lot of insight into that company's technology and their expansion plans. So really interesting stuff all around.
And Peter Newland is the owner of Bird Call, correct?
Yes, which is why I almost messed up his name because I was combining them somehow.
New Bird.
That's fine. Well, there were sound like really interesting sessions. We moderated a lot. There's a bunch of people who aren't here on this call who also had a lot of really interesting panels. I spoke with Leslie Silverglide before her panel with Lisa, and they spoke about environmental sustainability. And so I got kind of a preview of that talk, but very, very interesting people that we had come to the conference. You have a podcast coming up on your Takeaway with Sam Okus with Joe Guth, who also spoke, and it's going to be really interesting. You also have another one with the CEO of PF Chang's. Is that correct, Sam?
That is correct. So Damola Adamolakin is the CEO of PF Chang's. And I sat down with him ahead of his Ask the Experts with Lisa Jennings, and incredible. I mean, you know, here's a young guy who took over the company last year and thinking about PF Chang's through the lens of omni-channel service, how to make this, he says channel agnostic, and they're making a to-go prototype in order to do that. And he sees white space all around the world, not just the US, but in other countries as well, to expand PF Chang's. I don't know about you guys, but after the conference was wrapped and we were getting feedback from folks, I think his session was maybe the one I heard about most, that CEO of PF Chang's, Damola Adamolakin, he was doing a session on full service innovations and changes to the full service industry in particular, and incredible feedback from him. So yeah, takeaway with Sam Okus, we're going to run a preview interview we had done ahead of that session, now obviously post that session, and it gives you a quick little snapshot of what he spoke about there.
Yeah, so you'll get that fun little tidbit today, right before our interview with the boys that we did at the show. So that'll be really exciting. It's an episode filled with men today. sorry to the women out
whoops.
There.
Whoops. Nah, yeah, that's a bummer. Well, we're working hard on our diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, which was a big theme at the event as well. We had not lots of speakers, we had one panel on the first day of Create about diversity. I believe we spoke about that on the last episode of Extra Serving. And we closed it on with the creators panel, on which James Fripp, the Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer at Yum Brands, participated and had a lot to say about diversity there as well. Challenges all of us to try harder to make a more diverse and inclusive culture at your organizations. And so we are going to work on doing that as well.
And James Fripp was there because he won one of our creator awards, which the inaugural awards, we had the ceremony Tuesday night. I'm blanking on days now. We had the ceremony Tuesday night, and then Wednesday, almost all of our creators got to speak at a really interesting talk. I had to leave early, but I know that you guys have lots to say about it.
We're not going to say any though, because I don't want you to have any of that information since you left early. We're going to keep that for ourselves. No, it was a powerhouse. We had, James Fripp, Robert Earl, a legend in the restaurant industry, was founder of Planet Hollywood. He is now head of virtual dining concepts. Wade Allen, the head of innovation for Brinker, and then Derek Pratt, the COO at Portillo's. Awesome conversation about innovation in the restaurant industry and what that means today and going into the future.
I also really loved the format of that panel. We brought out each panelist one at a time, and everyone got a chance to talk about their company and what they're doing before we opened it up as a full panel for everybody. And I thought that was a really great way to really make sure we learned from each individual panelist before inviting them all into a discussion. And that discussion was great. I think everybody was having a good time. And I always love when you can tell the panelists are learning from each other as well as the audience.
Well, that is a beautiful wrap up of Create. Get ready for Create 2022, September 19th through 21st. Is that correct, Sam?
That is correct. In Denver.
In Denver. We'll be ready again to come at you next year. So be sure to stay tuned to this episode for a sneak preview with the CEO of PF Chang's. Almost called him the CFO of PE Chang's.
Oh boy, we all need sleep. This weekend isn't here soon enough.
I'll try to get some sleep before we see you all in Denver next September.
We will. That's right. So we're going to have a sneak peek of Sam's episode of Takeaway, which is a mini episode. So it's going to be nice and short and sweet. And then after that, we have our full interview with Michael Lastoria, Spike Mendelsohn, and James Park.
By the way, let me set up that just real quick too, because these are three gentlemen who have big personalities and big thoughts about the restaurant industry. If you've ever met Spike or Michael or James, it feels like they know everybody in the restaurant industry. So if you're listening to this, there's a good chance you've met at least one of them. And we had this thought, what happens if you put three personalities like that into around a table together with microphones? And the result is pretty fascinating, as you'll find out. And so they just were able to carry a conversation half of which I participated in until I had to go be a part of something else. And thankfully Holly stepped in, but really just, it's just to hear what can come out of the mouths of three really interesting restaurant professionals when you put them together. That's exactly what that interview is all about.
Great. And it was very, very fascinating. So I would definitely stay tuned for that. It's just a great chance to see how professionals interact with each other when there's almost nobody else in the room. So it was really great.
And when else do you get to talk about Squid Game and Parasite and somehow connect it to the restaurant industry?
See, just gotta listen.
And now here's a sneak preview of Sam's episode of Takeaway with Damola Adamolikin, CEO of P.F. Chang's.
All right, sitting here with Damola Adamolikin of P.F. Chang's. Damola, thank you so much for sitting down and chatting. You are going to be speaking later today here at Create about P.F. Chang's pivot to off-premises, which, you know, everybody had to pivot to off-premises, but you guys have made a really concerted effort in this and have built a whole prototype around this. Tell me about that. Tell me about the last 18 months and how P.F. Chang's has really adapted the model.
Sure. You know, and for us, it starts before the 18 months. So, you know, we initially bought P.F. Chang's in beginning of 2019. And I was part of the group that led the acquisition. And part of our strategy back then centered around off-premise, right? So, you know, we saw a wonderful brand with strong resonance with the consumer. You know, a lot to do on the dine-in piece, but really lacking in the off-premise piece. They hadn't developed the infrastructure. No app, no website to order from. A lot of kind of, you know, we thought simple things that would drive off-premise business and drive utilization of our kitchens and our restaurants. Mm-hmm. So really starting from when we bought the business in 2019, we invested in those, in that infrastructure, the digital side, technology, back of house infrastructure. And to your point, also took that even further. And we said, what if we developed a prototype that was centered around off-premise, takeout, delivery, and catering is how we define off-premise. So we developed what we call P.F. Chang's To Go. We actually opened the first one in February of 2020. So that was about a month before the world went.
Fortuitous, I guess you could say.
Exactly. So the timing, you know, in, it was lucky in a lot of ways, but the idea that off-premise was going to have a profound impact on the industry and was going to be a channel for growth for us was something that we held coming into the acquisition in 2019.
And now here is our interview with James Park, founder of Wingwalk, Spike Mendelson, founder of Plant Burger, and Michael Astoria, founder and CEO of And Pizza.
Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today at Create. How's the experience going for you guys so far? What you guys learned anything today?
Absolutely. We learned a ton of stuff.
You must have learned a lot from Michael's session.
Oh my God, I love Michael's session.
Michael spoke on labor, big topic.
I mean, big topic.
I think that's the first time he's ever spoken about labor. He's never tweeted it or Instagrammed any of that.
He doesn't have a lot of thoughts on it, frankly. Not. I don't know why I put him on that session.
I know.
I love the analogy that Michael made about how we were such an industrialized, you know, paying $25 an hour for the production of goods and all that went overseas. And then that was fascinating data for me. I did not know that our industry makes up a lot, 10%.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That kind of blew my mind, actually. It really did. Yeah. I think more people, like, that right there is a bundle of something to lobby with. Like, well, you know what I mean? Like, that to me is, like, speaks volume. Like, hello.
Well, if you think about the amount of dollars in this industry, and then you think about where those advocacy dollars are being spent, there isn't a lot of forward-looking, progressive thinking that allows, I think, our industry to get 5-10 years ahead of where it needs to be, with the recognition that you can't go backwards, because so much of what I see from an advocacy perspective, right, formerly known as lobbying, it's almost like we want to retain as much as we can of the old world and give a little bit on the new world. And the reality is, as long as you do that, you're going to get your ass kicked by the new world, just like the fight for 15, right, kicked the narrative's ass from every other, right, increased wage, whether it be 10, 11, 12, $13 an hour, and that's got to change.
Yeah.
Totally. James, how did your session go? You talk about new brand development, because you just launched a new brand.
I thought it went well. Yeah. Spike, were you there?
Yeah, I was there. I asked a question.
Yeah.
It was
well done. Good audience.
What was the topic? You know what? It was supposed to be something else, but
well,
then they switched it to
new brand development.
To new brand development.
You know
what are we developing?
We just wanted to put you on the
Wing
roster.
Wingwalk, baby.
Yeah.
Wingwalk. My new brand. Do you not know about Wingwalk?
I mean,
how do you not know about Wingwalk?
This is for the audience.
He's winging and walking it.
How do you not know about Wingwalk?
He's winging and walking it.
Now he's pretending. Now he says, oh, it's for the audience.
It's Korean wok fried chicken.
Korean wok fried chicken. He can read.
Wow.
Not
nicely
only does he
done.
Look handsome, and at
so
times
you're focusing
look like
on two
he's
of
articulate.
The international trends, chicken and Korean food.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yes. Yes.
Here's a statistic for you.
Okay.
98% of Americans love fried chicken. The other 2% lie about it.
That's official data, huh?
That's official data.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Korean is the Squid Game.
Oh, dude.
Are we going to talk about the Squid Game? No. I haven't watched any of it yet.
You haven't watched any of it?
Any of it yet. I can't wait.
It's off the charts, man. I think if you ever... what was the movie? I'm sorry.
The Hunger Games.
Yeah. Not The Hunger Games. Oh. The Korean movie. How do I not know
the
this?
One that won the award?
You are the Korean guy.
I get that
you
much.
Should know it.
No,
thank
I know
you.
What you're talking about, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
The Korean movie.
Parasite.
Parasite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was a great movie.
If you liked Parasites, these are like almost, even though they're 30, 40 minutes, like vignettes of Parasites and just constant like surprises.
Yeah. So what do you think? Like, what's the correlation to the popularity of now Korean film globally? Because we're seeing a lot of hit making coming out of Korea.
I think it's always been there. It's just now being recognized for what it has been for a very long time. If you think about South Korea, no other country in the history of the world has gone from a third world nation to a top 10 economy in 50 years. But South Korea did it.
Mm. Yeah.
South Korea did it. And the thing that they were very smart and strategic about was not pushing technology, was not pushing education overseas, but was pushing the culture, right? And then that infiltrated into, and they parlayed that into music, into movies, into food. And if you look at the food trend, there's barely any food flavor that's as popular as Korean flavors today.
My favorite place is to go to for dinner is Korean barbecue all day long.
I go.
Us. We got this place called the...
In New York?
No, well, New York is, I mean, another level in New York, but I'm in D.C., so...
Got it.
We got Korean barbecue in D.C.
Got great Korean barbecue in D.C.
So do you have plant-based chicken on your menu, and is that happening too? Because I feel like, you know, you got the two you got the chicken,
nice segue,
you're
missing on the third most important
the third most important trend, my friend.
I get that much, but why does it have to be a plant-based chicken? I have so much on my menu that is vegetarian, that is loaded in probiotics and prebiotics that we ferment ourselves, right? Kimchi, cucumber kimchi, which is called oi kimchi.
I'll tell you why.
Why is that?
Have you met?
Because
Americans?
Vegans and vegetarians want protein.
I get it.
They want protein.
Funny you should ask.
Is there,
yeah. I don't recall the name of the brand, but I have been looking for a plant-based chicken wing, and there's actually a pretty darn good one that showed up today at the show. I forgot.
Yeah, that's right. I know what you're talking about. Though.
You're complaining about no vegan food here, but we do have plant-based chicken.
I mean, listen, I wasn't complaining. I was just
an observation.
An observation.
Fun fact on Squid Game.
Bringing it back to
Squid Game.
Not a plant-based show.
The closest correlation is that the series creator, it took him a decade.
Oh, yeah.
He was living with his mother and his grandmother, and at one point had to sell his laptop for $675.
Wow.
That's how in the red he was. But the perseverance to get to the other side, to see your product, see the light of day. I feel like there's a lot of correlation to what we deal with as restaurant creators and operators, in terms of we all feel like we're going to be the next big thing a year after we launch, and it really takes the better part of a decade to get any traction in the industry in and of itself, and it's very complicated.
You mean I'm not having an exit soon?
No.
Well, it's interesting. Whole Foods made by you.
So Spike, you opened the first plant burger in the pandemic, right?
Yes. First one was literally 2 months before the pandemic.
But so you have like 10?
We opened another 9 during the pandemic, yes.
Yeah, so like, yeah. I mean, that's crazy because that's rarely seen to open at that kind of rate. So how did you pull that off?
Well, I think we were very lucky. We could have never predicted a pandemic, obviously. The second thing is Whole Foods took a massive hit in their hot food area. Wow. So it was ghost town all across Whole Foods nationwide. I think $1 billion a month loss in revenue in their hot food program, which is a ton of money, right? Like, so and then I pointed out a little earlier when we were talking, but you know, usually when you build a fast casual restaurant, it could cost you anywhere from $450,000 to $1 million, depending on what you're spending it on, right? I was able to go into Whole Foods with this partnership, and within 2 weeks of figuring out, oh, this Whole Foods available, we were able to open on a very little dime, right? So we didn't have to do a bunch of fundraising. We didn't have to spend a ton of money. We were able to go in, use already existing hoods, systems, maybe order a couple other pieces of equipment, and open in 2 weeks' time. So really, that was crazy. And I mean, we had, you know, I give it up to the staff and the guys that were running these things. Like, they literally put their lives on the line to go into Whole Foods and in the middle of a pandemic, yeah, and get these things going. But that's basically how we were able to open. I mean, it was pretty simple. It was just like the opportunity was right there, and we went for it. I mean, we had discussions, you know, saying, should we be doing this? Like, should we be, you know, pushing this startup through a pandemic?
Yeah.
And we sat down and we were okay with it. The first thing we did was ask all our employees that were working for us, basically, like, hey, are you guys okay with this? Mm-hmm. Because I'm not the one going, yep, and setting up the restaurants. Mm. And I think we all saw the opportunity of this brand, and we were willing to do it. So we did it. And here we are. And
how the hell did you go from Good Stuff Eatery to Plant Burger?
Yeah, Plant Burger.
You did a complete 180.
Yeah. Well, you know, I my wife is vegan, so that's one thing.
Making up for his past sins.
Yes, that's right.
Oof. Says the guy who took makes pepperoni pizzas.
Took a lot of cows down.
Yeah. I'm still sinner. I'm still proud sinner.
Yeah. I'm, you know, I like to think of myself as like, I'm opportunistic in all the right ways. Like, I just don't do things just because it's a huge cash grab. I felt, yeah, like I can have a lot of fun with this brand. I can make a difference. The other part of a lot of what I do in DC is I do a lot of food advocacy, right?
Yeah.
So to me, the struggle was when I was running a burger place and a pizza joint, and I had a bistro, I had a couple other restaurants, I can never really own up 100% in my restaurants and my entrepreneurship and my businesses to what my advocacy was. Yeah, yeah. I'd lobby for all these things, and I wouldn't be able to mirror what I was lobbying about or, you know, chatting about in my own restaurants. I could do it 60% of the way.
Sounds like every human being.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, you know, you cut corners where you need to if you're in a business. Plant Burger opened up this opportunity where I can meld like advocacy and my food, you know, my love of the food business together to come up with something that I felt I could be completely transparent about what we're doing. Like, I don't, you know, I'm like 100% transparent about our brand, you know, yeah, and it's not that I'm not with Good Stuff Eatery or not with Weezy Pizza, but I know we still don't go all the way through and through the way we would like to over there. So that's really why, I mean.
But what I love about what you did, which I think is extremely important, and Sam, you and I have talked about this, which is, you know, the massive chasm that exists between those that A, have a war chest, or B, have real scale in terms, yeah, of unit count versus those that don't. And the pandemic has only made that chasm wider.
Yeah.
And that's a real problem. And so what I love about what you did was you went about it in a non-traditional growth way that was very capital light. And you've now proven product market fit, right, in multiple markets as a result of that, given you, right, and your partner, the courage to open up Four Wall and make that investment. And so I think encouraging all the listeners out there that if you can't raise significant amount of capital, right, if you don't already have scale, and not just scale in urban, you need suburban scale, right, because America's a giant suburb, think about all the non-traditional opportunities, oh, to, yeah, get scale in, right, food. And it's not just about virtual or ghost kitchens. There's a lot of companies out there now that are thinking about, and already in, we've got six in New York in the last six entrants, like the Gorillas of the world, that have entered Manhattan in the last 6 months, mm-hmm, all in that sort of sub 20 minute, all looking to get in hot food. So think about all the opportunities exist out there to be the hot food provider 100%. For those types. And you can get massive product market fit across many, many markets quickly.
Yeah.
Right. Look how crazy this industry is. Mm-hmm. Right. Think about this. You have, right now, if you were to look online or you were to look it up, real estate would be the number one industry in America. But that sort of ebbs and flows, right? Because when it's hot, it's hot. When it's not, right? Mm-hmm. But so the number one industry consistently, no matter what, is healthcare, right? It's our biggest industry. And what's right below that? Restaurants and hospitality. We feed into that, and we forget that food is the medicine and that medicine is the drug, right?
Mm.
And there is a direct correlation. I know a lot of us won't talk about it. It's taboo to talk about it. But we have an opportunity, perhaps an obligation, to think differently about the food that we serve, the community that we serve, the kids and the people that we market to, that believe that when we say healthy, it's fucking healthy.
Mm, right.
But sometimes it ain't healthy. We market it that way. Yeah. And it's easy to believe that and then to repeat that to your friend Spike and go, Spike, let's go eat at X. It's healthy. It's made beep, right? You know I was going with that one. Mm. But sitting here listening to these guys and as passionate as these guys, and I, you know, I'm like, I'm enamored by this conversation. Here's Spike. By the way, if you've never been to Good Stuff Eatery, those of you listening, it is one of the best burgers that you will ever have. And I will just tell a quick story. In 2008, I'm living in Columbus, Ohio. I'm growing a Philly cheesesteak chain that nobody's ever heard of, a completely obscure chain. We had, 75 units. We grew it to 650 units. Seemed like overnight, but overnight takes a very long time. And I get this call and someone says, you got to get out to D.C. I'm like, why am I going to D.C.? Like, for what? I don't want to go talk to politicians. Like, no, you got to go eat at this burger concept. It's called Good Stuff Eatery. Mm. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I ended up getting there, driving to Dulles. I drive out to the location, and there's a line at 11 o'clock in the morning. I think you open at 11, and There's like literally like a line on the sidewalk, like, don't cross this line. And there's just a line of people standing out there. And I was like, holy cow. Like, I felt at that point you'd created that sector. But then to hear and to see now, fast forward, 2021, build a plant-based concept, that's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Man, that's fantastic.
Well, thank you. I mean, I really am enjoying it. I have to say, like, I know where it came from, Good Stuff Eatery, right? And there's so many parts of that business that I replicate with Plant Burger, as you can imagine. They're both burger businesses, right? So, but it's, I could say there's not one ingredient that we use. You know, obviously, you know, it's my family business, right? Good Stuff Eatery.
Yeah.
So I was a little wary about breaking off and opening another, what you could deem as a competitive restaurant, right? Both in the burger space. But I could sit here and tell you there's not one ingredient, one purveyor that I use that is from Good Stuff Eatery. It is a complete different scenario there, right? Completely different batch of ingredients, different purveyors. And that's what was so mesmerizing to me personally when I was growing the brands. I was like, how different these really, really are, but they have so many similarities, right?
I kind of want more competition in the family.
Yes.
Well, I kind of want them to, I want to see a plant burger inside of Good Stuff.
You brought up a great point, though. It's like you're seeing a lot of these concepts. Like, you don't have to have hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank to open up a concept, right? There's so many untraditional ways of starting a business, right? You used to have to go to the city to make a big splash, right? Now we talk about restaurants opening up in suburbia, right? As their first restaurant ever. You have like right here, I went across the street to grab some hair gel. You didn't notice my hair?
Hey, hello. I noticed it. It looks great.
Hello, ladies.
At Walgreens, there's a sushi restaurant inside. I don't know if you've been here. Across the street at the Walgreens, there's a sushi kiosk inside the Walgreens, right? But you're seeing all, you know, you have like, what was the other brand I just saw? What's the other one? La Madeleine, right? They have these expresses now that they're opening up in Walmart. They scored a Walmart deal, right? Yeah. And they're going up and opening up all these little small. So there's so much untraditional food and beverage opportunities because of the state of retail that I thought are really interesting. And one of the cool things that also happened because of opening up Whole Foods, we talked about this, is the controlling of square footage. The idea is like you always have to find a spot with 2,000 square feet, 2,500 square feet,
1,100
right?
square feet right here, baby.
There you go, right? You learn that bigger's not always better in our industry, right? Paying a little bit, like...
It's a misconception.
It's a misconception that you need so much space.
Yeah.
So that's something we're taking out into the brick and mortar, right? Like the first plant burger to live outside of Whole Foods is 850 square feet, right? And we're totally stoked about that. So I think, you know, there's a lot of things that came out of this pandemic, actually, that I think, like, were for the good, so...
Yeah, I go back to that, the industry being number two, hospitality, and I'll never forget this. Cameron Mitchell, who I admire, and he's done some wonderful things in our industry. You know, I recalled the conversation, him telling me that he was 600th in a class of 600 and still the class president, but I think he corrected me a year ago and was like, actually it was like 589 instead of 600. And still the class president, but it's the only industry that I can think about. If you think number one is healthcare, MDs, PhDs, MBAs, JDs, you name it, right? You have all these qualified professionals. The only MBA you need to be successful in this business is a mop bucket attitude and a passion for this business, which will rise above anything else, I'm telling you. I watch you and I am in awe, and I know they can't see me, but I'm pointing to Rasputin, AKA Michael Astoria.
Rasputin,
my boy. But like, you literally just let it roll off and just keep marching with your passion for your team, your people, always putting them first, dude. I'm floored by it, dude. And I just, that's a huge inspiration for me, because it makes me think harder about my position. I'm not there yet, I'm not 100% there yet, but it puts me in thought, and so yeah. It makes me a better operator every single day.
Yeah. That's what's great about this stuff, this creates stuff. You're gonna do that? You're gonna do it.
What a great plug, you guys. Yeah.
You got it. I was going to.
Michael, take us home.
Listen, this is what it's all about, these creates, right? This is like, we get to share the knowledge, and I second what you just said about Michael. I draw inspiration from his panel, right? And yeah. I already took a couple of notes down, and I may or may not be able to implement those things in my businesses, but just knowing that that kind of vibe is out there, and like that people are striving to do that, I think is all the difference, you know?